We are going to look at the rewards for obedience today. We're going through the life of Joseph, and we are dealing with life's crucial issues as we go through Joseph and how it applies for each one of us today. And turn to Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41. And there's just a few verses I just want to begin with, just to give us a start for what we see happening here in the life of Joseph. And we've had quite a bit of his history already. We're already probably just a little halfway through his story. And in Genesis 41, beginning with verse 41, we start to read, "So Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt.' Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger, put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as a second in command. Men shouted before him, 'Make way!' And thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt." We're going to look at the rest of the chapter as we just go through sort of verse by verse. I came across a club that I had never heard of before, and it's actually started by a Christian. And I don't think he was really that serious, but he just started it to see where it would go. And it's by Upton Dixon, and the club is called Dependent Order of Really Meek and Timid Souls. Now, if you take the first letter of each word that I just said, you get an acrostic that reads doormats. Okay, doormats. Dependent Order of Really Meek and Timid Souls. And their official insignia is a yellow caution light. And their official motto is, "The meek shall inherit the earth," if that's okay with everybody else. Well, we get the feeling that, you know, to be this really humble person, as if you almost have to be a bit spineless and docile, and that's not how it is. Or we have to ask for people's permission to do anything and all that sort of thing, that kind of humility. The Bible says that Moses was the humblest or the meekest man on the face of the earth, according to the book of Numbers. And yet, Moses was anything but spineless. He had a strength that very few of us can even identify with, how he stood up to his people. And of course, Jesus also said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart." So there are two people that we're told in the Bible who were really meek. But if you look at the origin of the word meek, the original word meant something, a wild power that is now under control. And originally it was used of wild horses that were tamed. And now you have this power, but it's under the control of its master. And that's really what people are, people who have power, but that power is under God's control. And God wants each one of us to be at our very best and to exert ourselves, but for his kingdom, in his glory's sake, that he be in control. When we look at Joseph's history, we started out with a young teenager who had a bit of an ego problem. He was daddy's boy, had the special coat, and got into trouble with his brothers when he had these two dreams, and he couldn't wait to tell his brothers and his parents about his dream. The dream that one day they would all bow down before him. Not a very wise thing to do when you're practically the youngest of the bunch, and you're telling your family how one day they'll all cower down to you. Got him to a lot of trouble, ended up as a slave in Egypt. In Egypt, he ended up being a prisoner, ended up being forgotten. And he was in jail for 13 years. When you're in jail for 13 years, well, that included a little bit of time in Potiphar's house. We don't know how long that was. But when you're in a foreign country, a foreign language, a foreign religion, you're all on your own. And practically the whole time is spent in jail. You can imagine how discouraging that must have been. And the work that God was doing in his heart, shaping him to be the servant leader God wanted him to be. Then he has the opportunity of all opportunities to stand in front of Pharaoh and interpret his dream for Pharaoh. Well, that was his get-out-of-jail card. And God interpreted those dreams, and as a result, Joseph is now being elevated. And that's where we are in his story. That's where we are. He has just interpreted the dream correctly. Pharaoh knows it is the correct interpretation. He knows that the wisdom of the gods, or the wisdom of his God, probably more specifically, Pharaoh recognizes it and elevates Joseph to this position of trust. And suddenly we see his rewards for obedience. And that's where we now see his change of status. Let's look at what happened with him. When you look at Genesis chapter 41, beginning with verse 41 and also with verse 44, we see, first of all, he's given a new authority. First of all, there's territorial authority. Look at verse 41. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." At that time, Egypt was the most powerful nation of all ancient civilization. There never was a nation of power like Egypt up to that point. Suddenly, he is now the prime minister of Egypt. Talk about territorial authority, of course, with that legal authority. Not only territorial authority, but also financial authority. Look at verse 42. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. Now the signet ring, the word signet itself in Hebrew meant to sink into. It was his MasterCard. Whatever he wanted done and paid for, he just pushed that Egyptian signet ring into that. That meant it was paid for by Pharaoh. It was the Egyptian MasterCard. Suddenly, overnight, he has territorial, legal, financial authority. Talk about a change in status. Not only a new authority, but secondly, a new wardrobe. Look at verse 42, the last part. And he dressed him in robes of fine linen. He used to have a special coat from Daddy. Now he's got a linen robe from Pharaoh. He used to have chains around his neck and around his wrists and around his feet. But it says, and put a gold chain around his neck. From chains of bronze to chains of gold. It's a new wardrobe. Thirdly, and I like this one, he was given a new set of wheels, got a new Mustang. Verse 43, first part. And he had him ride in a chariot as his second in command. Pharaoh had the first chariot, Joseph's in the second chariot. It's the limousine of the day. And folks, you can count on it. This was no used moped. This was the chariot of all chariots. You can just imagine how that chariot would have been decorated. It would have had shiny mag wheels with gold and all kinds of stuff inlaid. It would have just been the chariot of chariots next to Pharaoh, of course. But he got new wheels. Fourthly, he got new honor. It says in the last part of verse 43. And men shouted before him, "Make way!" Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Wherever he went, people went before him shouting out, "Make way, make way. This is your new prime minister. This is Joseph." Wow. From being thrown into a dry well, calling out, nobody caring for him. And now, an entourage of people crying out, "Make way, make way. This is your new prime minister." Talk about a new honor. Everything is new in his status. Not only that, he gets a new name. Verse 45. And Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah. Had Joseph just kept his Hebrew name, he might have been viewed with suspicion by the Egyptians. So Pharaoh gave him an Egyptian name to sort of Egyptianize him in the eyes of Egypt. Now, for us, we would have said, ooh, that's compromise. But Joseph had to live with that. That it wasn't his call. It was put upon him. And he's given a new name. Zaphnath, Nath, comes from the Egyptian word Neith, the goddess of wisdom. And Neith was the goddess that all other gods would go to when they couldn't get along with each other or they couldn't make up their minds about something. Supposedly, all these gods would go to the goddess of Neith, the goddess of wisdom of all the world, according to Egyptian beliefs. He is given the title based after that goddess of wisdom. Why? Because if you look earlier in verse 38, so Pharaoh asked them, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Then verse 39, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. And so he's given a new name after the goddess of wisdom, a new name. Well, the good times keep on rolling. You got a new wife. Look at the last part of verse 45. Pharaoh gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife. He had no choice. Pharaoh said, have I got a chick for you? She's the daughter of a priest, and she will be your lovely bride. I'm going to give you a wife. Someone befitting the prime minister of Egypt. And I'm sure she would have been a good looker to match the position that Joseph was in. Suddenly, Joseph is in the frontline news. High visibility. He's the envy of the land. He has control of the land. And all this stuff is bestowed upon him. He never asked for it. It simply was given to him, all this new status. Why? Because he could be trusted. Plutarch, who lived in the first century and watched the abuse of power among the Romans, wrote this, no beast is more savage than man possessed with power. But not everyone who has power is a beast or savage. Thank God there are many Josephs out there with power, but controlled power that honors God and that causes them to be trustworthy. I maybe shouldn't even admit this, but I used to be a fan of Johnny Carson. Man, I used to love to listen to him. And just his sarcasm. And I love watching Johnny Carson. And at what point when Ronald Reagan was president, he made this announcement. Ronald Reagan kept his mouth shut all day today. Tomorrow, he'll explain what he meant by that. His sarcastic way of, you know, you can never trust people what they say. You know, you're always suspect of people's motives when they say anything, especially people of power. And then when they don't say anything, oh, there must be a reason why they're quiet today. They're up to something. Joseph is up to something. Well, what's he up to? He's just a trustworthy man. That the most powerful man on the face of the earth bestows honor on. He's just so trustworthy and favored by God. Well, it doesn't stop there. A new limitless future. Look at the first part of verse 46. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. 30 years old. And he's the prime minister of the most powerful nation on the face of the earth at that time. I remember when I thought 30 was middle age. You know, you're young and you see somebody 30 and, oh man, you can tell how, you know, they've already aged. You know, you're 15, you look at someone 30 and you go, oh, wow. Well, now I can't imagine being that young. I can't even imagine being 30. It's like, I'm going, he's only 30 and he's what? He's the prime minister? Wow. Well, let's look at history. What has history done with some young people? David was anointed king by Samuel when he wasn't even 20. Daniel was a teen when picked by Nebuchadnezzar to be a top court official. Joash was 7 years old when crowned king of Judah in 2 Kings 11. Josiah, in 2 Chronicles 34, was 8 years old when he was made king. Mary, the mother of Jesus, was in her teens when she became the mother of the Savior of the world. Charles Spurgeon, that great British preacher, became that famous pastor at the age of 20. G. Campbell Morgan was only 13 when he preached his first sermon in England. By the age of 23, he was called the Bible teacher of Britain. The age of 23. Joseph is 30. And things are going great. He's the who's who of Egypt. Look at verse 49. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. He ended up being so successful in his plan for the country to prepare for the hard times ahead that it is overflowed with abundance. His wisdom just oozed out in all his policies. Everything was just going for him. I mean, he could have got up every morning and just sung, oh, what a wonderful morning, what a beautiful day. I've got this wonderful feeling, everything's going my way. Things are going awesome. Talk about a life turnaround. Well, it doesn't stop there. He gets a new family. Look at verse 50. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipherah, priest of On. And Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh. We see here that Joseph remains monogamous, just the one wife. Two children born. And he gives his children Hebrew names. Now they try their very best to Egyptianize him. But when his sons are born and he has control, they get Hebrew names to commemorate the provision of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in his life. The first son's name is Manasseh. The word Manasseh comes from a Hebrew word that sounds very similar to, which means to forget. The name means to take the sting out of a memory. Why did he do that? Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. The sting of all the bad times is gone. It's gone. And his name reflects the new blessings of God. And there's nothing from the old life that's hanging on, haunting him, dragging him down. He's let go. He's let go in the sting of the past. Isn't there to haunt him or drag him down. You may be here today. And there may be some sting of the past that you're still carrying. God can come into my life. And if I allow God to work through my issues, and I bring them before Him, and I ask for God's intervention, I ask for God's forgiveness where I have hung on to things when I should have let go, and I ask for God's healing, God can take out the sting of the past. Most of you are aware that about a year and a half ago, when I went to the Crow's Nest Pass and I went into a house there for a couple of days just to do some reflecting and go over the past of my life. And I used those 2 days just to bring all of my memories before God, and I asked God to erase all the pains of the past. What a relief. What a relief it is to let go. It doesn't mean you forget your past, but just to allow God to take the sting out of every bad memory. What a release. What a release. You can have that experience too. I had that experience, so what a release. For 63 years, I've been carrying some stuff just to let go. Say, God, I don't need to carry that backpack anymore. I can release the pain of any past bad memories. Well, then God continued to bless him as he's able to let go and acknowledge that God had looked after his past. Another kid was born to him. Verse 52. The second son he named Ephraim, and he said, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. Actually, twice fruitful is basically what it means. I've been doubly blessed. I just look and I see God's hand everywhere. The hand of God. I see his blessings. Wow. And we see here that obedience brings its rewards. If I will be faithful to God and allow him to work his newness in my life, we look at all the new things God gave Joseph because of his open, surrendered heart. Letting go of bitterness, letting go of the past, open to the new things of God, what God did for him. Because of that, look at verse 56 and 57. When all the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened up the storehouses, sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the world. He's in a place of giving. He's in a place of blessing. The whole world is coming to Egypt now, basically coming to Joseph saying, we need food, we need food. Because of his obedience to God, God placed him in a place of honor and power and provision. He was able to bless the world for his obedience to God. Well, that's the story. What are some of the lessons we can take from this story to take home with us today? Here's my first observation. Number one. Lengthy challenges don't need to discourage us. Lengthy challenges don't need to discourage us. At age 17, the bottom dropped out. Year after year after year, all he saw was prison, 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 disappointment, disappointment, disappointment. When you're in a different country, in a different language, every day is like a lifetime. Every day, every week. Every month, every year. It would seem like forever. But did he lose heart? No. His heart wasn't in prison. Physically, he's in prison, but his heart isn't in prison. His heart is set free to the grace of God. Researchers at Berkeley University did an experiment that involved introducing an amoeba into a perfectly stress-free environment. This amoeba had the ideal temperature, the optimal concentration of moisture, a constant food supply. The amoeba had an environment to which it had to make no adjustments. You would think this would be one happy little amoeba, stress-free. Oddly enough, it died. Apparently, there's something about all living creatures, even amoebas, that demand challenge. We require change, adaptation, and challenge the way we require food and air, because comfort alone kills. Comfort alone kills. We need challenges to make us grow and adapt, become fruitful. That's what Joseph did. So lengthy challenges don't need to discourage us. It may well be God's gift to us. Secondly, bad memories don't need to hold you back. Bad memories don't need to hold you back. We all have bad memories. A lot of my bad memories, I'm responsible for. There's some that I'm not responsible that happened to me. But I have my share of bad memories that, well, it's my fault. I'm responsible for it. But they don't have to hold us back. I know there's a lot of people who have some bad memories with church experiences. And they won't let go. They say, you know what? Been there, done that t-shirt. Not getting involved anymore. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And they allow their past to hold them back. Bad memories from the past preventing them from making good memories for the future. Just because not properly letting go of the past. The parable is told of a farmer who owned an old mule. Story has it the old mule fell into a well. The farmer heard the mule braying and found him in the well. And so the farmer called in his neighbors, and after assessing the situation, they decided just to bury the mule in the well. They began to haul some dirt, began to shovel the dirt into the well. Well, initially, the old mule is hysterical. But as the farmer and the neighbors continued shoveling and the dirt fell on his back, a thought struck him. He would shake it off and step up. This he did. Blow after blow of dirt on his back. Shake it off, step up. Shake it off, step up. It didn't take long. He stepped out over the well, over the wall of the well. That's what God is asking us to do. Folks, by the grace of God, shake it off and step up. Bad memories don't have to hold you back from future opportunities. And thirdly, great blessings don't need to disqualify you from service. Some people are suspect when you're successful. Well, you know, you're probably successful because you haven't been quite trustworthy, been a little shady, and that's why you're so well off. That's why you're so successful. And sometimes we're suspect of successful people. But you know what? We need a whole pile more Josephs in our lives. We need people successful under the control of God. We shouldn't necessarily be suspect of successful people. We need them everywhere. We need more Josephs in our lives who are successful with God, trustworthy. So that leads me to one final question. I know you're all anxious to go have breakfast. I'm even going to let you out a little bit early. This will surprise you. We're going to finish a little early today. Yes, I see fist pumps. Yeah. Getting ready for the fork in your hand. I know. I leave with a question. How do you know what really lies in the heart? You find out when the opportunity is there to live it out. You look at Joseph's life, and usually there's probably two main areas, two main common temptations most people fight lust, and anger. When the opportunity comes, what comes out of your life as a response will show where your heart is. When that time came, the scene was perfect for an affair in Potiphar's house with Potiphar's wife. Had there been a lustful heart in Joseph's life, it could have probably shown up over there. But he ran. His heart was clean with God. The opportunity was there, but the opportunity revealed what was in his heart. God had control of his sexual desires. Now comes another opportunity. The opportunity for anger to surf, to say, okay, now I'm prime minister. Now that I've got the power, I can think of a whole lot of people I'm going to get even with. And I'm sure there's all kinds of people that could have gone through his list and said, I've got the power. I've got the power. Watch me. No revenge. No one is thrown in jail. Eventually, when his brothers show up, they don't get thrown in jail. And it was dealt with. It was let go. He was open to open, pure opportunities for God. How do you know what really lies in the heart? You find out when the opportunity is there to live it out. What are you living out right now? What is it showing about your heart? Where are you at in your struggles with life? Are there areas that need cleansing? There are areas that need to be cleaned up so you can have that Manasseh, that Ephraim in your future experience. Just to let go. Let go. Give the sting over to God. Just let go. And then to open yourselves up to the fruitfulness of God in your life. And you know, usually this is in the context of relationships. Here's how a fisherman explained the behavior of crabs. He said, quote, when you catch them, if you only have one crab in a basket, make sure there's a lid on it to keep it from crawling out. But, he said, if you have two or more crabs, you don't have to worry about them escaping because they drag one another down and none will ever escape. Don't refuse to be a crab. How are things going with other people, with other relationships? Are there any crabs in your life? Are you being a crab? Am I being a crab? Have I dragged anybody down lately? Am I allowing someone else to drag me down? And I've given them power to have some authority over me. And it's controlling my emotions, it's controlling my feelings, and I'm literally becoming a crab. I close with a prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. 7th century ago, realizing the intense need of his day for people to be affirming of others when they were hurting, this is what he wrote, and may this be our prayer. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Who is God calling me to lift up this week? And to be a blessing to. Let's stand in closing prayer together. Father, it's so great to have stories like Joseph to learn from, to turn to, and to realize that my heart doesn't have to be in jail. I don't have to be a prisoner of my past. I don't have to be a slave to my past. I can let go. I can let God. I pray for every heart that is here, including my own. I pray that we will have that Manasseh Ephraim experience. We will be a people open and free in our relationships. We will let go. There will be no dark clouds in our psyche when we see people, when we interact. Just love, forgiveness, more than willing to give a hand. And may the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn His face toward you and give you His peace. Amen.